This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. This message is a warning.
Everyone, hang on!
Karabast. Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions.
Let's go get him.
All right, if I tag along?
I'm on my mark. Get down!
My name is Rex.
The rebels of the Lothal system. Hunt them down. My gut tells me this is a trap.
Everywhere we go, we run into those guys.
Kenobi!
To defeat an enemy, you must know them.
I'm not afraid.
That's what worries me.
Embrace your destiny.
We are fighting a bigger fight.
He was my master.
Ahsoka, why did you leave? Do you know what I've become?
Yes, master.
And now, here's your host, Aaron Harris.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rebels Reactions. I'm your host, Aaron Harris, and we, again, have two great episodes to talk about. They are just hitting us left and right with these awesome episodes as they race toward the finish line for Season 4 and for the series. Hopefully they just take their time getting there, folks. But we're going to be here, and we got two great episodes. We got Kindred and Crawler Commanders to talk about today. Great episodes, and let's get into it. Let's tell you what's going on there. Of course, in Kindred and Crawler Commanders, we have our crew being chased back to their base by Grand Admiral Thrawn's assassin, Rukh. Of course, if you read the Legends line of books, you'll recognize that name as the Nogori assassin that does all of Thrawn's dirty work. But when cornered, the crew splits up with Hera and Chopper using Ryder's newly repaired hyperdrive-empowered U-Wing to escape Lothal with the stolen data recorder with all the information on that TIE fighter elite that Ezra and Sabine stole in the previous episode. And the rest of our heroes, of course, stay behind on Lothal to face the Imperials and try to, you know, rebel. With the Imperials closing in, they put their trust in the Loath Wolves, who lead them safely and somehow magically transport them to the other side of the planet, away from the Imperial threat. Meanwhile, Hera must convince the Alliance back on Yavin 4 that they need to attack the construction facilities on Lothal. Meanwhile, Kanan, Ezra, and Sabine, Ryder, and Zeb are taking over a mining guild vehicle equipped with a long-range communications device so they can contact the Alliance and help try to organize this said attack. So after dealing with some issues with the taskmaster for the slaves on board and, of course, the captain of the vessel, they wind up securing the ship and contacting Hera, who informs them that the rebel assault is pending. A lot of exciting things going on in this episode, a lot of things to talk about, and some things that some people have been waiting for the last four seasons now. So let's get right into things and get it started. Joining me for this episode are two awesome friends of mine. We have, of course, Jay Krebs joining us. Jay, how you doing?
Hey, Aaron. Hey, Nick. It's so great to be back. I am just so excited to be back on Rebels Reactions and talking some Star Wars and getting right back into the swing of things. So thank you so much for having me back on.
Oh, no. Thank you for joining me. This is awesome. It's been a while. I'm glad you were able to come back on and join us. And, of course, also with us is Nick DeColandria. Nick, how you doing?
Good, my friend. How's it going, Aaron? Jay, it's great to hear your voice again. And I appreciate coming on Rebels Reaction for the first time and digesting all the stuff that we've got to see in a week of Star Wars episodes on Rebels. It's a It's a great time to be alive. So especially
Oh, that it is. It's a great time to be alive and a great time to be a Star Wars fan. We got some. They're doubling us up on the episodes, and they're rushing us into movies. So we got a lot of Star Wars to digest, but we are going to digest and explore Kindred and Crawler Commanders today. Definitely two awesome episodes, that as every episode has been this season. Nick, let's start with you. What were your first impressions when you watched Kindred and Crawler's Commanders?
I think my first impressions were that like the feeling you get when you know something is about to like crescendo and to crest into something larger that you've been waiting for. So after digesting these two episodes in particular, compared to the previous ones where we really focused on the TIE Defender and really getting to understand that the ship's around and they're building more, and that felt like itself a really smallly contained story, these episodes left me just waiting for the larger scope of Rebels now to come into play. Like, okay, now we see more pieces. We're beginning to see more, you know, characters on the board, like Rook, like the Nogris from the classic, you know, Star Wars legacies. And it really just left me feeling like, okay, something is really building here. What's next? What's going to happen next? So just anticipation, I would say, is what I've left with.
Very good. Very good. Definitely a lot of anticipation left with this episode, a lot more than some of the other episodes this season. Jay, what do you think of these episodes when you first saw them?
Well, I love the term that you used, Nick, when you said crescendo, because I think that's a great way to put it. And I do agree with you. There's, as they said in the episode, all paths are coming together. And you really do start to feel that way with the things that we've been seeing. So, you know, between some of the mythology, the legends characters, and, you know, references to things that we know are going to be happening in the future, very near future, actually. You kind of, it's almost like an electric feeling in a way that you kind of know what's going to happen, and but yet you don't. And so it's just, it's a good problem to have, I guess.
Indeed it is.
I wouldn't even consider it a problem, personally.
No, not at all. I guess problem wasn't the exact term I should have used, but...
No, it's all
good. It's a good feeling.
It is, indeed.
Break into a Mr. Rogers song. It's such a good feeling to know Star Wars is on. You can rewrite that one and make $1 million. There we go.
So. Parody's going. There you go.
Absolutely. Weird Al, it's all yours, man. All right, so... Definitely, let's jump right into this, because definitely I felt the same way as y'all. I mean, this to me, all the episodes have been great, but this is the first one out of it that has felt like it's building to. I mean, you said it best, Nick, a crescendo. I mean, we're about to just explode at this point in this series as it speeds toward the end, and definitely we felt that, especially in the first one in. The Kindred. I blanked on the name for a second. And so a lot of exciting stuff there. So let's jump right into to Kindred, because there was a lot of great things. And right off the bat, we have Thrawn calling Price and saying, "I'm sending help." And she's not wanting help, but she's getting it anyway. Because you could tell Thrawn is starting to get a little... was not pleased with her previous actions. So he sends his assistant, his special agent, his assassin. We all know as Rook. Of course, Rook was written about in the original Thrawn trilogy by Timothy Zahn, a character created there, a Nogori assassin that did all of Thrawn's dirty work in the books, which was... If you haven't read those original books, they are well worth the time. They're just a fun read altogether. So definitely if you want to go back and read just some fun Star Wars, they're not canon anymore, but read them, because they're just phenomenal reads altogether. That Thrawn trilogy by Timothy Zahn. Awesome getting to see him on screen and voiced by our favorite Ewok too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was nice having him back in the fold again. Of course, it's not Star Wars without Wicket, is it?
So true. And he did such a great job, too. I mean, of course, you know, they manipulated the voice just a little bit. But, wow, bringing that character to life, just it really gave me the chills. And how creepy, you know? I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't listen to the audiobooks with that trilogy. So, of course, you play in your head what you think this character is going mm-hmm. to be like. Mm-hmm. But then when you see it played out and you actually hear it and, you know, you just watch how he moves and you listen to how he talks and just, you know, the slyness in his voice, I can smell, you know, just it's mm-hmm. It just gives you the chills. It's creepy almost, but in a good way.
Oh, absolutely. It was very creepy. And we had the first image of him is getting off. He's like, I smell them.
Smell the Lasat.
Lasat, yes, yeah. So it was very much like a Halloween, like kind of scary in a way. You're like, yeah. You're like, this would have been great last week.
Exactly.
Well, no, and wasn't that part of his skill set too? You know, and of course, I'm borrowing from legends here, but there's always a bit of truth in legends. But wasn't it that Rook could smell not just your species, but people that you were related to as well? If I remember correctly, there was something about his sense of smell that's what made him such a good assassin, was that he could almost smell the bloodline.
Yeah, I believe that was the case. It's been a while since I've read those books. I'm about due to – I try to read them every couple of years, so I'm overdue.
But I'm staring at them right now on my bookshelf, which is so crazy. I mean, they're literally sitting right in front of me.
Quick, Jay, go through all 12,000 pages and just make sure it's correct. It's not that many. So read the book still. So. No, Jay, you probably – I mean, I would say, knowing how Thrawn wrote characters in those trilogies, that would not surprise me if that was Rook's special, unique talent. Because the way that he just popped off both the page when you're reading them, but also the screen as you're watching it, in that very very methodical, creepy way that you just knew this is why Thrawn back in the trilogy, but also here, has chosen these individuals to be his I would say henchmen, because that's a lesser word, but assassins, but trusted confidants to get things done, just because of those skills. So I totally believe you. That's sounds completely plausible, because the way that Rook jumped off the speeder and said, I could smell Lasat, he was like, yep, believable. Mm-hmm. He's coming to get them. Not a good thing.
Totally. So. Well, and two, you know, with that also, again, just envisioning what the Nogri looked like just in general. Mm-hmm. Leia had Nogri bodyguards as well in the EU, I remember, in the Legends line. So I always felt intimidated just reading that.
Oh yeah, I mean, once they were in that Thrawn trilogy that Zahn wrote, once they realized she was the offspring of Vader, they loved her. I mean, they would do anything for her. They had that blood oath with mm-hmm. Vader that they passed generation to generation. So Leia inherited it. So yeah, they protected her throughout those books, and it'd be interesting to see how this plays out, because he's not really liked by the Imperials. Thrawn loves him. Obviously, he keeps him in his service. But you see him clashing right off the bat with Governor Price. I don't know why. I just keep on calling her Admiral. I don't know why. Governor.
Do you know something we don't?
I don't. I don't. But she's not someone I'd promote to Admiral either. So.
Well, she definitely didn't like getting her toes stepped on. You could tell that.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And they did butt heads almost immediately when Thrawn says that he's being sent out. When he gets there, he's like, she's very arrogant about it, just like a standard Imperial would be. Of course, you know I'm Governor Price, as he's getting off. And he just goes right into, I smell Lasat, and he's not alone. I love Warwick Davis in that role. He just, it was perfect. And then they butt heads throughout the thing. He winds up tracking them to the rebel base. He calls for, calls Price. He goes, by the way, I found their base. She sends backup and joins them. And he's like, you know, I could have taken them out myself. She's like, nope, we're going to do it my way. So they storm the base. They wind up bombing the mountains where they're hiding. And that's where we see Rook at that point, because he goes off to try to track him. And as far as we know, when the episode leaves off, did so unsuccessfully. We don't know where he ends up in this episode. But I don't think we're done with him overall. I'm sure we will definitely see him again in these upcoming episodes.
Well, I should hope so. Because if not, that was a very bad little tease there. shame, story group.
Very much. No, I'm sure we'll see him again because we got some. We got another episode left in this half of the season. We got one more episode.
So we're almost halfway through already.
We're actually slightly over halfway, actually.
That makes me sad.
How many episodes are there supposed to be?
15.
I did not. Only 15.
Only 15 in this final season. Yeah.
So, and this makes 8, right? Yeah, we're already up to 8.
Yeah. The last one, Crawler Commanders, make 8. Yeah.
Then we have one more episode before the holiday break. One more episode for 2017 before it goes in. Then the rest will wrap up in 2018. So it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. But I'm sure Rook will be right in the mix of things there. Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned, of course, with Rook that he tries to chase him down when they're escaping, and mainly because of they make their escape because of the Loath Wolves. The Loath Wolf gives him a way out and mysteriously takes him into a cave and winds up transporting them across the planet. Sabine winds up tracking their location and says, we started off in the northern hemisphere, we're now in the southern hemisphere. So nobody's really sure how they got there. Your impression with these Loath Wolves as they started making their appearance and digging into where they were going here. Jay, what were your thoughts with this whole scene with the Loath Wolves?
Well, you know, my head has been swimming ever since we saw the first tease of these wolves. And, you know, who could they be? What could they be? What do they symbolize? And for me, the thing that stands out the most in this one is the fact that there were 3. And, you know, as far as what we've seen with 3, we've always seen the light side, the dark side, and then the one in the middle, perhaps. And the white wolf, if you look at them in the cave, was the one in the middle. So that was the first thing that struck me about it. And of course, you know, we know that the Loath Wolves were considered a spiritual animal. And there were, you know, the cave drawings and that type of thing that were indicative of them working together. And even Kanan had said about their spiritual connection to the planet itself. And just the fact that the wolf knew Kanan's name, Doom. You know, obviously there's a connection there as well. So, I mean, I have some speculations, but, you know, of course, as usual, there are more questions than answers at this point.
Absolutely. They always leave us with more questions than answers with these episodes.
That's part of the fun.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so much fun. And these wolves definitely are. I know Filoni's probably having a blast with these wolves.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
He's sitting back in his office somewhere. He's got the pins on, watching them lose to my lightning, and he's grinning ear to ear. So it's one of those things that nothing's going to get him down because he's got wolves and rebels.
He's flying high just right there.
Absolutely. And they, as Kanan said in the episode, they have a unique connection to the Force in the planet of Lothal, which makes makes it quite interesting. I mean, that's how, and Kanan could sense it. I think he could sense it even prior to them calling him by name, by his given name, birth name, Caleb, calling him Doom, Caleb Doom. So there's a very unique connection there, and we see some unique, powers essentially, as they're being transported across the planet. You get that whole scene, Nick, I know, to me, when I was watching that scene and I'm seeing them being the whole transportation scene there, was it me or did it look like Ezra, when he was showing Ezra's eyes, looking for it, almost getting that expression of what was going on, that mandatory, look at me, look at the special effects, look. Didn't it was something like straight out of Star Trek 1. That's why that movie was so bad. But because they all just stood there and looked at special effects. But with this, we got that look at Ezra. But if you look at his eyes when everything's going on, is it me or does it look that has this, almost the same look as if they were in hyperspace?
Right, right. No, I agree. I think the look that the Wolves had before they got transported and woke up on the other side of the planet did look very much like hyperspace. I'm going to say, like, I it's funny. I like to look at the Wolves in two different ways for me. One, kind of disappointed for their usage, and I know part of the fun is we don't have all the answers. That's not what Star Wars is about. Use your imagination. It's better not to have a story told, but just using them as a device to get them out of harm's way, other side of the planet, with some force powers to transport them through the planet. I was lost at that point. I have to be honest. Like, I was just lost in the whole part of that storytelling. It's like, okay, I guess so. I'll believe it. But I've seen crazier things happen in Star Wars. That's fine. But what you mentioned, Jay, about how the Lost Wolf, the one in the middle, knew who Kanan really is, I think that's an interesting part about the Star Wars stories, that we have other species and other, I don't want to say non-sentient beings, ones that walk up and talk and interact and things, but you do have other aspects of the Star Wars universe, like Lost Cats, like Lost Wolves, that do have a connection to the Force, do have a connection to the world around them, and we're constantly reminded of Yoda's teaching that everything is put together, everything is connected. And just that episode, I felt like, did a really good job in reminding us that, you know, we have to be true to ourselves, because we're not the only ones that see us, that are connected to us, and that remember who we are. And so I think that part of the story really fascinated me more than the, hey, we're going to go hyperspace and through the center of the planet, and we're good. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I can definitely see your point there for sure. And I love the idea of being connected with everything. And, you know, if we think back with Ezra's experiences, he is very much attuned to the animals that we've seen throughout Rebels. I mean, if you think about the Purrgils and just all the different experiences that he's had, and, you know, the whole hyperspace eyes thing. It's funny that you said that, but what I thought of was, because you remember in the last episode, the wolf had put, Sabine to sleep and said, sleep. So I'm wondering if it's almost like a more of a hypnotic thing that they had hypnotized them and then carried them to the opposite end of the planet, because those are some big wolves. And they would easily be able to be a beast of burden for all of them. So, you know, you almost wonder, do they have different methods of almost like hypnotizing or allowing you to go into such a state of sleep or relaxation that then they were able to transport them. So I don't think it was necessarily magic perhaps, but, you know, maybe some sort of a power or, you know, something that they were able to do to manipulate that happening.
Much like a Jedi mind trick makes you think things that aren't really there.
Exactly. Yeah. Sure.
I could buy that. I buy that 100%. Sign me up for that newsletter, Jay. I'm down.
All right,
no,
then.
I like that. That's a great idea, because at no point do we get a time frame that they were unconscious or what kind of time frame we were looking at. So it's very plausible. Right.
And they were kind of in a dream state, too, because the first thing you see was the little Lothcat on the grassland. Mm-hmm. But then they wake up on the floor of the cave.
Yep. Familiar settings at first, right?
Exactly. Very much. Very much. A lot, The Loth Wolves, I think, are going to be one of those things we'll be talking about for a long time. Because I don't think we will ever find out truly the extent of their connection to the Force through the rest of the season. I'm sure they will continue to play an important role going forward. But I don't think we'll ever fully explore what they're capable of and what really ever find out truly what their connection truly is and how deep it truly goes. Almost it's got me thinking like it's one of those what happens to the planet happens to the wolves type thing. And so it'll be interesting to see how things play out for them there. But I love the wolves. Love the wolves. They are awesome. Well, let's shift a little bit here. We're going to, of course, go over to we mentioned him a little bit earlier because he sent Ruch out. Let's talk about Admiral Thrawn. Of course, he's in command of the fleet of still over at Lothal, which is pretty much under military lockdown. And we see him a couple times in this episode. And, of course, first when he is telling Price that he's sending Ruch. And there's not, well, let's just say Price isn't pleased with the sending, which we discussed earlier. But Thrawn isn't really pleased with Price either. And lets her know that, mainly because of the theft of the fighter, the destruction of the fighter and everything that wound up happening because of that. And lets her know that it's not, her recent efforts haven't reached his level of perfection per se. And then at the end of the episode, toward the end of the episode, when we see the Ewing escape through the fleet while being chased by all those TIE fighters, we see very much a look on his face that we really haven't seen before. He's always been very cold, calculated in his appearances. He always has that same straight face on. But you could, the way he was animated in this particular shot, his expression never really changed, but you could sense the almost the frustration at that point coming from him because people are escaping. His plans aren't happening the way they should. Did anybody else get that sense of frustration from Thrawn in this episode?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Nick, do you want to chime in first? Cause I have some thoughts, but I'll let you go first.
Oh, good. Great, because I only have like one. I agree. Oh. Yes, I agree. I did think it was at the end there, watching Thrawn's character react in that way that you mentioned, Aaron. It almost felt like it was out of character for Thrawn. Like I was like, he's so cool and calculating, and you know he has had setbacks, but we've never kind of seen him visibly frustrated with how things have gone. And you know, having read the new Thrawn book and the old ones, I you know still barely remember you know him ever being thrown off his game. And seeing him frustrated and thus thrown off his game, perhaps, did feel out of character. But, you know, we are hoping, I guess we're hoping, unless you're a fan of the Empire, that he gets his thrown off his game because this is about the Rebels and you're hoping the Rebels can succeed in some form or fashion. So, I agree with your observation, Aaron. Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, definitely agree. You know, and like you said, his characteristic coolness was kind of rattled a little bit. And I think a lot of that is just, it comes back to Hera. And, you know, Thrawn has been so calculated and so, you know, is, and like you said, in the new novel and even in the old novels, it's just, he's the one sizing up everyone else. But somehow Hera always seems to escape what he thinks is going to happen or what she thinks she's going to do. So I think that it she's almost like that little gnat that you can't catch, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. And you think it's such a small thing, but yet it can be so annoying. So I think that, you know, for him, especially when Hera just blew right through doing hyperspace at the time, I mean, that was such a cool scene.
That was a cool scene. That,
yeah. You know, you almost wonder, should she do that just for Thrawn's benefit too? Right. You know, did she really have to go right through there? But, you know, part of that was, I'm sure, her tactic. But kind of like, yeah, take that, Thrawn. And yeah, so I think he's grasping. I mean, just the fact that he brought in Rook obviously is him grasping at something more and trying to get a handle on things that, you know, perhaps are starting to slip through his fingers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jay, that was, I forgot about the scene where she takes the U-Wing through like the mining operations.
Back
and like hitting the back button like at least one time, or if not mm-hmm. twice, but like I gotta see that again because it was pretty cool.
But I'm thinking, was that bodies that came out? You know, as it like blew out the other end,
right?
I was like, oh
right,
my yeah. gosh, was yeah. that really?
It could have been. Yeah. There were troopers in that bay, and mm-hmm. that was a great scene when they just jumped in the hyperspace through that docking port. It reminded me a lot of the Falcon jumping into hyperspace inside the ship mm-hmm. in The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Right.
Which, of course, leads credence to the Forces of Destiny episode that we talked about last week, where Han and Hera are kind of going back and forth about which ship's better, the Falcon or the Ghost. So it leads to that little butting of heads there, which I enjoyed. But yeah, that was quite an interesting, and definitely I'm sure it's led to his frustration, because Hera just always seems to slip through, and he can always tell when it's Hera too. Mm-hmm. He has Hera pegged more than anybody else of that Rebels crew that right. we've seen. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of that has to do with what happened on Ryloth, with the family mm-hmm. and everything, mm-hmm. when we were first starting to get our glimpses of Thrawn last season. Mm-hmm. he was in her home. He had her family right. heirlooms. He had it all right there at the mm-hmm. tip of his fingers. And I mean, so I think he is more familiar with, I mean, he's familiar with the whole crew, but I believe he knows Hera better than anybody else that are on our crew. So definitely it's going to be interesting to see, because, you know, we know from the trailer, he's going to get his hands on her at some point. She does get captured. So we saw that in the trailer for season 4. So mm-hmm. we know that's coming. So that's going to make that even more of an interesting twist at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think, too, I mean, for whatever reason, and of course, obviously, the focus is on the Rebels crew, because hence the name Star Wars Rebels. But I do think that overall, the Ghost crew causes him the most trouble and the most interest, because you've got Sabine that he's been so interested in from, you know, the weapons expert point of view. And then you've got Hera that he's been super interested in. And then, of course, you know, the fact that Kanan, he knows, escaped Order 66 somehow and is still around. And then you've got Ezra. So I think in every way, the whole Ghost crew, and I think he's still trying to figure out Zeb, but
as we
you know,
all
they're,
are. As
they're
we all.
Yeah, truth, right?
Man of the people.
They're all kind of pieces of a puzzle that he's very frustrated in trying to figure out how the pieces all fit together, and they're just not fitting the way he wants them to fit into his little plan.
I appreciate you going through kind of the history of why Thrawn has Hera pegged a little more, because I was just thinking in my mind, it's like, how, you know, like, how does he know, like, how, what does he have it out for Hera for? It's like, he always goes to her, but you're correct, going through the history of the show and where we've come from in terms of the storyline. He does have her history and her family pegged more for sure. And as a pilot in the skill and everything, she has the means and the ways to constantly get, you know, the Rebels out of danger too. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. Yeah. He's got her number, and it's just a matter of time before he calls it. And we see, and I think a lot of his frustration that we see built up in this episode actually goes back to his history altogether, not just with this crew, but his history altogether. I don't know. I know you brought up the book. I assume both of y'all have read Thrawn.
Mm-hmm.
Is that safe assumption?
I've gotten almost done with it. I keep setting it aside for other things as they start coming out. So I will admit I'm not completely finished with it yet, but I think I've read enough of it to, you know, okay. I'm not afraid of any spoilers or anything like that. Okay. So.
Well, that wasn't really going to spoil anything. We know when he first comes on Rebels, when he first makes his appearance, he gets congratulated on his recent promotion to Grand Admiral. Mm-hmm. At the end of the book is his promotion to Grand Admiral. So the book leads up to literally his appearance on Rebels. Mm-hmm. So this is really, honestly, going after the Ghost Crew is really his first major assignment as Grand Admiral. Mm. So I'm sure that's getting to him at this point because, you know, yes, he's had missions as captain and as commodore and all everything else prior to this in the book where he had some, maybe things didn't go exactly as planned, but he planned it out and things got done. This just seems to be a little different situation for him, and his strategy works. I mean, like at the end of season 3, he had them beat. He had them captured. They were surrounded by death troopers. He was standing there looking at them face to face. And then out of nowhere, this force monster comes in and is just destroying everything.
Yeah.
Bendu's just going mm-hmm. going nuts on
Bendu.
Everybody.
He's going Bendu on people.
and they wind up escaping. Yes, it's still a victory for the Empire. They destroyed the base. They've destroyed tons of ships. But people escaped. The Ghost Crew escaped. So I'm sure he doesn't really count it as a victory in his book as some other Imperial commanders would. He just finds frustration in that. Especially now that Harris slipped through his fingers again. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that's beginning to weigh on him because I'm sure this is taking a lot longer than he wants it to. This should have been a quickly quashed. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. This should have been something crushed. This rebellion should have been crushed a long time ago. If he had his ways. So definitely interesting to see him in this light. I know, Nick, you mentioned hopefully he stays frustrated. you know, I have this love-hate thing relationship with Thrawn. I absolutely love him. Out of the Legends line of books, to me, he's probably one of the most fascinating characters I've ever read. I absolutely cannot read enough about this guy. At the same time, I absolutely hate how they killed him off in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And I am praying that that's not how he goes in this, especially now that they brought Rook in.
For those that haven't read Legends, we might want to keep that under our hat.
The book's been out.
I was going to bring that up, but I didn't.
Because it's not enough time. What do you think, Jack?
I was going to say, it's been over 25 years.
Have to be really, really quick to. Yeah, but we won't go there. Yeah.
I don't want to see it go down like that. That's my. And now that they've brought him in, and I've said this on previous episodes of this show. I don't know how they're going to end it with Thrawn. I don't want to see him go out like that again. But at the same time, I don't want to see, I like the guy so much, I don't want to see him lose. But at the same point, I don't want to see him... I don't want to see him fail, but at the same time, I know we can't see him victorious. So it's right. One of those catch 22s that either way, I'm not going to be happy with how this ends. So for this guy, for this character. So, but we do have some happy endings for other people.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Well, happy middles, maybe.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not an ending.
Well, yeah. It's all in how it, how it plays out here. We definitely have some, continuation of what started in the last episode of Rebels. We have the love connection between Hera and Kanan coming to light again. We have, of course, them discussing the relationship, and Kanan even brings it up. When is enough going to be enough for you? When are you going to stop fighting for the rebellion? When is it going to be enough? And she's like, well, when the Empire's defeat. You're like, well, what then? She's like, I don't know. it's one of those lofty goals that, you know, you set, but then you're like, well, what's going to happen when you get there? Because you really don't have plans, because you don't know if you're ever really going to get there or not. And Kanan wasn't too pleased with that. And of course, there's that discussion that goes on there. And again, they draw in close, and just when you think, just like last episode, just when you think they're about to have that kiss, in comes Ryder.
Dang it, Ryder.
And Zeb.
Dang it, Ryder.
Zeb last time, Ryder this time, I tell you. Interrupting, and they have to go about their business. But later in the episode, as she's about to leave for the Alliance to try to break through the barrier, the blockade to get to Yavin 4. Kanan stops her and he's like, listen, I know about what happened earlier, you know, and starts trying to explain things off. And she basically just shuts him up with a kiss. The kiss.
Yes, she does.
The kiss heard throughout the galaxy at that point. And and it was long enough that Sabine saw it, tapped Zeb. Zeb turned around, cracked a huge grin.
They all saw it.
It was good. And definitely it was something I know that people have been clamoring for since season one. They weren't going to end the series without it. And it was good to finally see that. I know personally, I watched this episode for the first time yesterday. It came out Monday night, but it was released on the app Monday morning. I watched it Monday morning in my car sitting outside of work waiting to go in. And when Ryder interrupted that time, I just screamed. I was like, come on, Ryder. Like, of course. So,
not again.
Not again. Not again. I kind of felt his pain. I've been there before. So,
it's a PG podcast, man. It's a PG podcast.
I know. So, thoughts, man. Everybody, what are your thoughts on finally we're seeing Kanan and Hera finally showing how they felt? Jay, thoughts?
Well, you know, of course, everyone's been waiting for this, but to me, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Because of they've always felt this way about each other. We've known it. They've known it. But it's almost like, almost in desperation, I feel that maybe Hera finally gave in to it. And it almost makes me wonder, and I hate to say this, but is that the last time we're going to see the two of them together? And I hate feeling that way, but it's almost like she put, in a way, even though it seems like she put a continuation on their relationship, is it closure that she put on their relationship? I don't want to go there, but, you know, I have to think about things from every angle, as Thrawn would say.
I know what you're saying. Cause I had a huge discussion with somebody today about this, and there was a lot of finality in that scene.
Yes, that's how I felt too.
And it was very, as exciting as it was, there was so much finality into it. It was almost heartbreaking. They have that moment. She gets on board that ship. She looks at him and says, may the force be with you.
Mm-hmm. It was a very lilting, yes. May the force be with you, but yet, yeah. You know, it almost reminded me too. It's almost like a desperation kiss, because where my mind went to immediately was the kiss that Leia gave Han just before he was dropped into the carbonite chamber.
Ooh.
You know, I'm so sorry to be the party pooper for all of this, but, you know, I'm constantly analyzing and thinking, yeah, this is great, but. Yeah, what do you think, Nick?
Actually, my boys, my twin boys, love the movie Trolls. And there is a scene in Trolls in which the main female troll, Poppy, is asked, "What's your plan?" And she says, "To get to Bergentown to rescue everybody." And her counterpart, Branch, goes, That's not a plan. That's a wish list." And so, like, that sentiment, like, keeps going through my head when I'm thinking of every time Kanan asks Hera, "What are you going to do after you win? What are you going to do after you win?" And then counter to that, it's also to Kanan, like, "All right, what's your plan? Like, what now? What do you, you know, like, you got your wish list. You figure out how Hera feels about you. Now what are you going to do?" And so, like, that keeps just going through my head every time, you know, I think about that scene. But I did feel I'd agree, Jay, that going into the next episode, the crawler episode, that if we didn't hear that the attack on Lothal was going to go through, I would feel much more stronger that might be the last time that Hera and Chopper, you know, would have seen the Ghost Team. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's no spoilers. We know that, you know, Hera and Chopper are on Yavin 4 in Rogue One. But we don't know where the rest of the Ghost Team is. And so, you know, anytime they're all split up now, especially as we don't know the timeline, anytime they're split up, you just kind of worry, period. You're like, okay, we're assuming this happens. We don't know for sure. So you got to be on the lookout for that kind of stuff. So I definitely agree that, you know, potentially this could be the last time. I personally don't think it is. I think we'll see him again, you know, together. We still have some time left to play around the series for lots of things to go wrong or to happen. But yeah, it was a great scene. You know, it was like I said earlier, Aaron, it was the kiss heard around the galaxy. a good one for a change. So,
it's one of those, I like how you brought that up. I mean, it's, I don't feel with all the finality in this that it will be the last time they see each other. But I have serious reservations about the next time they see each other. Because we know she's going to get captured. We saw it in the trailer. Mm-hmm. That's not a spoiler. It's in the season 4 trailer. We see her in Thrawn's custody. So we know that's going to happen. So you don't think he's just going to sit aside and let her stay captured. So somebody's going to have to break her up. Or help rescue her. So I don't want to go. I'm watching what I say because I don't want to go into major speculation here. But I got a feeling he will be involved in that. Because he ain't going to sit back and just let it go. There's my Frozen reference for the night.
Nice.
Let it go. So, well, to use Nick's reference, it's not your plan, it's your wish list, right?
Exactly. It's a wish list, not a plan.
It's a wish list. So.
Oh, I got a wish list a mile long in ending season 4. Ending of season 4 is not one of it, so.
I know.
So, but that was Kindred, a good episode altogether, and we go into Crawler Commander from here, and which was, I will be perfectly honest, Crawler Commander, when I first saw the title, this episode was not what I had envisioned. Based on the title, I seriously, honestly thought we were going to see Wolf and Gregor again. Based on the title.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
That was where, when I saw that title, I was like, sweet, they're coming back. Don't know what kind of crawler they're going to have, but the crawler commander, I mean, it just fits. I mean, and boy, was I wrong on that one.
Is it, I don't have the titles right in front of me. Was it Commander or Commandeers?
It was Commandeers.
Because I thought it said Commandeers.
It was Commandeers.
Like they were commandeering it. Okay. I thought maybe I misread it. So I was making sure that I pronounced it right. Okay.
No, you said you had it right. I misread it. It is Commandeers.
Okay.
And that's why when I misread it, I was hoping for Gregor and
Wolf. I see where you went. Okay. Yes, okay. I'm a little slow on the uptake.
Yep. It's all good. I was very slow on the uptake on that one, so I gotta go back to school and get my hooked on phonics going again. But
tomato, tomato, you know, yeah. Commandeer.
That one extra E threw me off. So, but
easily done.
But there are definitely some interesting things that happened in this episode that we definitely want to hit on as well. And this leads right into what we just finished talking about Kindred with the Hera and Kanan relationship. Kanan throughout the episode at a couple different chances constantly is 100% positive he knows she made it through to Yavin 4. He says it. He's like, if she, because somebody would say so, like, if she made it. And he's like, oh no, she made it. He just knows that it happened. Just like, you brought up Han and Leia in Empire Strikes Back. It goes right back to Leia in Return of the Jedi. When, after the Death Star explodes, Han's like, I'm sure Luke wasn't on there. And she's like, he wasn't. Mm-hmm. I can feel it. I mean, it had that same vibe to it at that point for me. Mm-hmm. So he was beyond positive he knew she survived. Nick, with that kind of insight, knowing that he can sense her where she is, he was pretty confident about this, right?
Oh, yeah, he was super confident. He knew. He was like, yep, she's cool. Don't worry about it, guys. Just keep doing our mission. Let's go. We need to get word to her and to Rebel Command that stuff's going down on Lothal. Which was, you know, it was cool. It was definitely refreshing to see that bond between the characters. Now, was that heightened more because of what we just saw in the last episode? It was emotions more playing into that. You can maybe say that's the case, that it's could be hopeful thinking, but I think we know Kanan by now that he knows how to put aside, you know, the emotions, his personal feelings for getting the mission done. And so, like, in that regard, I like how he just kind of squashed, like, you know, hey, this is the right thing to do. We have to get message out there. She's there, and she's convinced Marvel Command to get back here with the troops. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Kanan was all in, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he certainly was, and definitely made for the driving point in this episode, which was to make contact with the Alliance. The Alliance, of course, they wanted to contact them and find out what was going on, what decision on the TIE Defender was. And of course, being in the Southern Hemisphere now, and with the Imperial blockade, they weren't able to just, you know, send a signal out. They needed to find a way to do that. And they found that on the Mining Guild vessel. I'm not even sure what even to call it. The crawler miner machine thing that they had going on.
Aaron, can we call them what they should be called from the legends or the old EU, and that is that's World Devastators.
From
Dark Empire. Those are totally also lifted from our beautiful Legends universe. Those are Totes McGoats, World Devastators, and it made me so happy to see them. So happy to see them.
Touché. Very good. That's exactly what they were. World Devastators. Yeah, I never made that connection before.
Yeah, I mean, nice, they weren't devastating the whole planet, but the only reason why I know that is because they gave me such a hard time in, like, the Nintendo 64 Rogue Squadron video game. They were so hard to beat with an old-school V-Wing. I hated them so much. They haunt my dreams. So
the nemesis of Nick. So,
but, yeah, they definitely were. And, you know, they were also, but, you know, the lesser of the so. They weren't taking the whole planet apart, just the surface layer. But, yeah, that I don't think they gave it a name. They call it some sort of crawler, though, and they described what it was doing. But I can't recall it. Maybe I blanked out, though, when they said the name. I was like, nope, not the real name.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember calling it a name, really. What were you going to say?
Yeah. I was just going to say, I mean, we've known of these or something like them being used by the Empire here habitually. It just reminds me of, you know, basically going to a planet, sucking all the life off of it, moving on, just like in the Ahsoka novel. So it's kind of the same sort of routine that the Empire has been doing, and now they're on Lothal doing the same thing.
Oh, they definitely are. They're really tearing that planet to shreds. So
it's unfortunate.
So taking command of this crawler, or World Devastator for them, was definitely a must, because it was equipped with the long-range transmitters that they needed to contact the Alliance with, but they got a little more than they bargained for when they boarded it. And of course, we have a few mining guild droids, security droids, which Sabine easily dispatched. But it wasn't them. It was more of the crew that was on there that gave them the issues. They had the captain, whose name was Sivor, Captain Sivor, voiced by the extremely talented Seth Green.
Yay.
So it was good to see him enter in the world again of Star Wars. So, and of course, very unique situation. I loved how they introduced the character to begin with, just kind of sitting back in his chair with his earphones on, just jamming while the world's being destroyed.
And Zeb, I love that song.
Exactly. Yeah, no clue anything's going on around him until Zeb pulls the earphone back. I love that song. it was awesome. And he keeps referring to everybody as pirates. You pirates, you don't know what you're getting into.
Nice.
So
yeah,
Now I just got to wipe the spit off everything now. But but yeah, it was a very interesting character. What were your thoughts of Captain Sivor, Nick?
I think it kind of added to the level of maybe not everybody knows what's going on in the universe. Like, he just thought they were pirates, you know, like they were just there to steal his ship to that destroys planets. Like, why does that make any sense? Because that's all this character of the mining guild is thinking about. They're not thinking about the Empire versus the Rebellion. They're thinking about how to make a profit, right? And so is everybody else on the ship besides the slaves, you know, who are there on behalf of the Empire, apparently. So, yeah, I thought it was a great way to add some, you know, humor and you know, some, you know, fun parts to a very serious last couple episodes, you know, assassins losing people, you know, losing a planet, added a nice level of humor to it.
It really did, and it was some, as you know, with these episodes getting toward the end and as serious as some of these storylines are getting, we're getting some comedic elements are definitely necessary to break it up. But I mean, because after all, this is, even though we're spending hours a week recording shows, breaking every little nuance down, I mean, this is still essentially a kid's show. So, you know, you don't want to make it too serious that they don't want to watch. There has to be that comedic breakup in there somewhere. And Sivor really provided that at that point. And so did, one of the rescued slaves as well. We have Visago back. We see him in season one. He disappears through all of season two and season three. And also we get him twice in season four. He's back with a vengeance this time. But we find out Visago, after being captured, after smuggling the crew onto Lothal in the early episode, he winds up being... not managing to talk his way out of the Empire's grasp like everybody thought he would. And apparently they sent him to the mining guild as a slave, and he is now working as a slave on there. And of course, when he sees Zeb and Kanan show up, he's like, oh, my friends are here. He reminded me a lot more of Hondo in this episode than he did Visago from the early episodes. Am I wrong in that? Did y'all get that too?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, you know, Visago is his own man, so to speak, but I think he is the Hondo answer to season four, you know. He's so lovable. But yeah, I loved the way that he honestly thought that they showed up just for him. You know, he why else would you be here but to rescue me? But yeah, he's great. Yeah. So I love that character. So great.
Yeah, and then he's offended when he realizes they weren't there for him.
Right. He almost had to talk himself out of not believing that was know, true.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was quite humorous in how he acted, and it felt more Hondo-ish than Visago, because mm-hmm. Visago was always very business, and mm-hmm. in season one when we saw him. So this was a different Visago, and I guess slavery just kind of softened him up, I guess, and changed his attitude toward life, because he does...
Well, Hondo... Yeah, go ahead.
Because he does change his views, but... Go ahead about Hondo.
I was just going to say Hondo was kind of the same way too. I mean, he kind of came off as sort of this hardened pirate, you know, kind of guy, smuggler. And then once you got to know him, you got to see the goofy side. So I think that's kind of how Visago is too.
Oh, absolutely. I can see that. Because mm-hmm. he definitely is a little goofy in this one. So,
yeah.
So let's shift gears a little bit, because we want to talk about Ezra. Ezra plays a somewhat... I mean, they all play prominent roles in this episode, but Ezra has a unique role in this episode, and he's done it in a couple episodes this season and throughout the past. Ezra's apparently trying to become a voice actor, not a Jedi. he is impersonating anyone and everyone. He was an Imperial officer in an early episode of this season, and now it's Sivor. He does an impression of Sivor, which honestly shocks Sivor, because he was like, "I sound like that?"
Yeah.
which was very interesting, very comical, really. So what do you think? Do you think he'd get cast in Rebels, Jay?
I think that the whole voice acting, just seeing his face as he was trying to articulate what Sivo was saying, was probably the best part of the whole thing, for sure. But but yeah, he's a multi-talented young man, to be sure.
He definitely is. And again, that just added to, for this episode, added into some of that comedic relief that was needed for this season, seeing Ezra do his voice acting routines. But then we also have Zeb, who really kind of meets his match in this episode. Zeb has always been our muscle guy, our big muscle guy. He's the one that doors open, there's two stormtroopers, he just bops them on top of the head and they collapse. I mean, he picks them up, throws them overboard. I mean, it's Zeb's been the muscle. The unbeatable. In this case, he goes toe-to-toe with a Trandoshan taskmaster, slave taskmaster, and who gives him really a run for his money. And honestly, if it wasn't for Kanan catching him as he went over, he would have bit the bullet. In that combat situation, seeing them go toe-to-toe, what were your thoughts on that, Jack?
Well, I think it was actually kind of cool to see Zeb have a challenge, you know, and I think Zeb was kind of almost welcoming that challenge as well, because even he said in the Kindred something about it's getting weird, and that's when you know it's getting good, or something like that. So I think he actually welcomed that, not that he wanted to perish because of it, but I mean, hey, he was up against a Trandoshan. I mean, that's a challenge in and of itself. I wouldn't want to meet one of those guys.
I can't say I blame you there. I mean, because definitely the one he was up to was a beast, very reminiscent in stature and size as Bosk.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of, actually. But of course, you know, that's the first thing I think of when I see any Trandoshan, but
yeah,
that's because I'm narrow-minded that way, I guess.
Oh, well, no, it's not. And what I really enjoyed about this episode is the look at Trandoshans that we got, because we have Sivor, who is smaller than Ezra, and then we have the Taskmaster, who really gives Zeb a whooping, going, and they're just completely different size, statures, and they're all Trandoshans. So it's nice to see that there is a variance in their species as to how big they can get, size and everything, because up to this point, we've had Bosk.
True.
As the measuring stick for Trandoshans. So this was a nice exploration of of the honestly the species at that point. So I did thoroughly enjoy seeing the differences there. And obviously the little one had more of a mouth than he bargained for, honestly.
Mm-hmm. See, now I just learned something there because I didn't realize that they were both Trandoshans. I thought that SIBO was just a different reptilian type species. So you dropped some knowledge on me there. Oh. Thank you.
Well, I wish I could take credit for that. I just shared what was shared from Recon. They actually brought that up during Rebels Recon, about the different types of Trandoshans and stuff. And so that's where I found out, because I initially thought what you did, okay, we got another reptile species out there somewhere, and now we found out it's not, which was fine by me.
So that's similar almost to the Utapons, correct? Because they had two different types of almost like species, if you will, within their makeup as well. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, that's okay. how I took it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So definitely, yeah, you're right on the number with that. So definitely, it was nice seeing that exploration and expansion of the Trandoshan culture. So very cool, very cool. A couple more things. I know we're running tight on time here, but a couple more things I do want to hit on real quick that we need to look at. We see a lot of Hera in this episode on Yavin 4. And of course she's in that well-known conference room that we see, in episodes past. We see it in A New Hope. We definitely see it in Rogue One, around the table where all the meetings are held, discussions are held. And we know she's pretty much lobbying for the attack on Lothal at this point, because she knows what the TIE Defender's capable, especially now the Elite is capable of, and they need it destroyed. They want to destroy the factories before they can put them in mass production. And she's really lobbying for that. But while during the discussion, Mon Mothma brings up something that's kind of pushing that attack back at this point. She mentions that their Empire had recently initiated a Protocol 13 on a planet. They never specify which planet, but initiate Protocol 13. Of course, Hera even admits, what's Protocol 13? I've never heard of that. And she, Mon Mothma, shares the fact that Protocol 13 for the Empire is the complete and total evacuation of all Imperial personnel from a planet. Sound familiar, folks? Protocol 13 is apparently what we saw on Jeddah before the Death Star did its test shot there in Rogue One. So I know this stuck out, because now it's got me questioning, where in the timeline are we in this? What kind of planet would they, the only planet of course we ever know of that they execute 13 on, it of course would be Jeddah at that point. Are we near that timeline in Jeddah? Of course, I know we're approaching that area, but are we now running concurrent with it, or what's going on with that? What are your thoughts, Nick?
My first thoughts are, well, as long as that Order 66, we're good. I mean, in the Empire and their protocols and their orders, I mean, it's like a running joke. I feel like it's like, what's Protocol 14? Everybody goes to Arby's. I don't know. So, like, pretty, you know, but I think, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we started the show, before we started recording, is that, you know, where does this, is this what we think it is? Is Protocol 13, you know, is it Jeddah? Is it something else? You know, we do know that, you know, just from the other books, and Jay, you mentioned the Ahsoka novel, and I think Thrawn touched on this in the book for Thrawn, that, you know, the Empire is also devastating other planets for their war machine for the building of the Death Star. Is there something else that's happening that we don't know of? Is there another weapon? You know, we have to kind of assume that it's going to be the Death Star, because that's what this is all building up to, at least for A New Hope. But yeah, I found it, you know, I do love seeing the interactions between Mon Mothma, Bail Organa, and Hera, and anybody in the command structure of the Rebel Alliance, because still, you know, from the standpoint of when you first viewed those movies, you first saw New Hope, you kind of tried to understand how the Rebel Alliance was taking shape, who was calling the shots. And every time we get a chance to see, you know, behind the curtain on Yavin 4 and what's actually happening, and a couple episodes ago when Saw Gerrera was back and challenging Mon Mothma and the Rebels to fighting, you know, fighting, I don't want to say dirty, but fighting with, you know, no holds bar, you get a better glimpse of what this war really is like, you know, what actually is happening, Tim, who's making these decisions, what information are they using to make these eventually very, you know, consequential decisions for the Star Wars saga. So, you know, that was pretty cool. And then getting that, you know, getting that little background information, like, we want to attack them, but we can't because maybe there's something going on here that could be really bad, et cetera. You know, Protocol 15, you know, everybody, you know, come back to base and play some Nintendo Switch. I don't know.
I kind of thought they'd play Galaxy of Heroes.
No.
Too obvious.
Only to get frustrated, my friend. Only to get frustrated.
Yeah, so. That game frustrates me sometimes. So. Oh, but yeah, well, Protocol 13 is definitely interesting because definitely I thought immediately of Jedha. And obviously there are other planets being devastated. But I kind of hope they kind of clue us in on what they were talking about, what planet we could be dealing with, because I don't feel we're running concurrent with Rogue One yet. I think we're still too far removed at that point, because by the time Rogue One came around, of course, Saul was established on Jedha. And two weeks ago, in one of our episodes, he was just discovering about Jedha. He had his first word about that. So I don't think we're quite there yet. So this obviously has to be another planet, and I'd love to hear the story of what's going on there. Hint, wink, wink. Come on, Dave.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you guys brought that up, because this is one of those things that just went right over my head, which I'm sure for some people like you guys was like, oh, they just said that. But for me, so it was a good aha moment for me that you guys brought that up. Because, and this is why I'm sorry. This is why I'm so glad I get to do stuff like this with people like you fine folks, because I learn things too. And then I'm able to make better connections between the things that I'm seeing and the things that I'm hearing. And, you know, like you said, kind of placing it in the timeline. But I think you're right in saying that it's, you know, I don't think it's necessarily running parallel, but it's got to be a protocol that they use, that it's like, okay, you know, once we're done and the last French fry has been eaten, then we leave the planet, you know? So
I love that riff. That's a great,
you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, we're done here. Mm-hmm. Let's move on. So, you know, like we were saying with the references to the Ahsoka novel and, you know, of course, now Lothal. It's probably just their way of saying, pack it up, move it out, we're done. So, we don't know what planet they're referring to, though, at this point. So that would be, like you said, Aaron, come on, drop us some hints here. Where are they talking about?
Yeah.
It could be just about anywhere.
It could be. Could be. That's what we want to see.
It could be Ilum. Oh, it could be Ilum. They got
all the crystals.
All the crystals there. And now they're heading to Jedha, going to be heading to Jedha.
Ooh. Cool. You heard it here first, folks.
Hey, there you go.
Take it to the bank. You heard it. To the bank.
Cash that check, y'all. So. I like that. Very good. Very good. Very good. So, of course, this episode wraps up with the communication with Hera from with the crew. And she advises them that the attack has been authorized. We're finally going to see the attack on Lothal. By the Alliance. And of course, Hera informs him, she's like, I told Mon Mothma y'all would coordinate the ground assault while we attack from up top. So we end on the note knowing that the attack on Lothal is imminent. And we know it's coming in the next episode of Rebels. The next episode, of course, Rebel Assault. And of course, if you've seen the teaser for that already, Yep, it's going to be awesome. Let's just say, if you haven't seen the preview yet, you don't want to miss this one. It's going to be awe-inspiring. So it's going to be great. And finally, Ezra is going to get exactly what he wanted, which was the assault on Lothal. This is something he's been pushing for all season. The whole time, he wants the Empire off Lothal. And almost you get that almost a sense of relief that it's finally happening from him when she tells him. How did you gauge his reaction, Jay?
Well, it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things, almost be careful what you wish for, in a sense. So, you know, as far as his reaction goes and what I was thinking in the back of my mind, you know, are two different things, but I'll just leave it at that.
I don't think it's going to, nothing ever ends up the way this crew plans it.
No, it doesn't.
So I
Ken, in a plans versus wish lists.
You know. Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, it's always plans versus wish lists. And I think he's going to learn the hard way. He's going to learn the hard way. War isn't all it's going to turn out to be. It's not going to be as simple as to drive the Empire from there. When he does drive them out, it's going to be at a very heavy cost.
That's why I say be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. And I think we're going to see that coming. I'm sure they're going to leave us. They always leave us with some kind of cliffhanger, don't they? So we'll get our cliffhanger in the next episode, because we're on the holiday break after that into the new year. So, but it's going to be great either way. And these have been definitely been great episodes to review. Let's go ahead and wrap everything up and hear and start with our final thoughts on these episodes. Jay, what are your final thoughts on Kindred and Crawler Commandeers?
Well, I honestly loved both of these episodes. Last week was good, but it didn't leave me with the same sense of both excitement and frustration that this one did, I guess. So, you know, I could talk about the Loth Wolves for hours, but of course we don't have that kind of time. And, you know, again, like Nick said in the beginning, this whole crescendo of all of these events starting to happen, and then all of these little bread droppings here and there, or breadcrumbs. Bread dropping sounds like something that you don't want to really deal with. But yeah, let's say breadcrumbs instead. That sounds a lot better. So, you know, we're getting left with all of these things to follow, and of course, like we said, the paths are all coming together. And but yeah, I think they're just two really, really great episodes. And I did see a little bit of buzz from people saying that the Crawler Commandeers was a filler episode. Shame on you people. There is no such thing, especially this season. So that's just my opinion. And I'll stop there, because I'll get myself in trouble if I say anything else.
No.
Great episodes. Loved them both.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I've gotten on that soapbox many times myself. There, in the world of Star Wars, there's no such thing as a filler episode. They all come back, as Kenyon say, everything comes full circle. Everything comes together. All paths combine, intertwine, and so what you may think is a filler now may have a very significant impact in the next episode or even a future episode. And I have to, and then anytime a filler gets brought up, I have to go back to Princess on Lothal and its direct correlation to Rogue One, with the Hammerhead Corvettes filler episode. Mm-hmm. At the time, everybody was saying, well, it was great, but they just did this episode to get Leia in it, which, you know, may have been one of the plans, but we got the Corvettes. Guess what? The Corvettes saved the day in Rogue One. So,
amen.
It was not just a filler episode. So I will get off that soapbox. I will go for another hour on that if I could, and I don't have that time. So
watch out, Aaron's going to turn into a puffer pig. Going to get upset.
Don't get me going on fillers. Nick,
I know I'm right there with you.
Nick, give me your final thoughts on these episodes.
Well, I think it's important to remember that, you know, Protocol 12 would be Emperor Palpatine just saying bread droppings.
I'm never going to live that down, am I?
I'm sorry, Jay. You said it and I had the same image in my mind.
Right,
but I can just see that as a protocol now. It'd be fantastic. Okay. you know, there's obviously this filler episodes. I mean, the holiday Ewok special was the all-time greatest filler episode back in the day. So let's not kid ourselves. there are some every now and again, but I don't think these were qualified as filler episodes whatsoever. And I would agree with you, Jay, that even from like last week's episodes were good. I was really excited to see the TIE in action, TIE Defender in action, and Thrawn stand there just, you know, popping shots off at the team at Sabine and Ezra and not moving. And but this was more of like this is leading up to something. We have more stories to tell. We have more lines to cross, more pathways to converge. And you really felt that in a lot of the different things that just came, you know, popping up at different points, whether it was Rook or it was, you know, the World Devastator showing up, you know, all these little things that have connected the old Star Wars universe and the new Star Wars universe together, but also leading up to what comes next. What is, you know, what's going to happen on Lothal? How is, as you mentioned, Aaron, how is Ezra going to learn the true cost of, you know, freeing his home planet and what you wish for? Maybe it's not what you, you know, all you thought it was going to be. So, yeah, I think these two episodes were fantastic. Having some time to sit on it and marinate and look at them in perspective of the whole season so far. And that, you know, we have half a season left and that there are some really interesting stories to look at all these characters with as we continue to watch them grow and see them towards the end here in the next couple of months. So, but yeah, for me, hands down, fantastic episodes. And it was a fantastic time again to talk to you guys about them this evening. So it was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
It definitely was. It's always great having y'all on, and I'm glad y'all were able to join us for this. And I have to agree with everything both of y'all said. This is, without getting on my soapbox again, far from a filler episode. This is going to have major ramifications. Both of these episodes will have major ramifications going forward in what is going to happen, especially Crawler Commanders. Crawler Commandeers. I keep saying commanders.
Okay. At least you didn't say bread droppings.
Well,
yeah, bring it up that time.
So
we're going to marinate the bread droppings. Right.
Nice.
You realize when this show posts.
I'm so sorry.
That's awesome.
You're fine.
That's
awesome. You realize when the show goes live and we post it, all the posts are going to have hashtag bread droppings on it. Now,
oh, gosh.
Spectacular.
So I may even
put that on my Twitter profile.
I maybe even throw that in the show notes there.
Protocol 14, or is that Protocol 12? I forget.
No, Protocol 12. 14's Arby's. Come on.
Oh, that's right. Okay. All right. I got to get this stuff straight.
13 is everybody leave the planet, you know, so because that makes sense too. Yeah, well,
yeah, please send me the handbook. So I
can evacuate the planet to go to Arby's.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. So, but yeah, the episodes were great. I loved I really enjoyed them. It was a lot of in-depth into I want to dig more into the Loathwolves and their connection. Of course, we finally got the satisfaction of Kanan and Hera and their relationship. And I got to hear one of the best lines of the season as they're running away from the Empire, looking after the wolves, trying to escape, and Ryder just yells out, "How do y'all stay alive?
Yeah. How have you been alive this long?
How have you people been alive?" it definitely was just perfect. And I tell you, Clancy delivered that line perfectly. So, hoorah. It was a great episode. Both were good episodes in this season. Grading the episodes, Kindred, I would have to give an A-. Crawler Commandeers, as much as I enjoyed it, I would have to give it a B. Looking at grading them, both great episodes and both will have major ramifications going forward, especially now with Visago and the slaves in command of that crawler working now for the Rebellion. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Nick, we'll go with you. First time grading any of our episodes. What are your thoughts on grading these?
I would flip it. I would say Crawler would be A-, because a little known thing we didn't talk about, but when Ezra surprises the captain on the ship, he uses a very much an Obi-Wan, "Hello there." And I was
Oh my gosh, I'm glad you brought that up.
I totally forgot about it until just
Hello
now.
Hello there. Yeah.
It was great. I forgot. And I was like, money, beautiful, love it. That's one of the best things ever for Obi-Wan. But I would say A-, for the Crawler for sure. And you know, I think B+ or A-, you know, even for Kindred, just because the Nogri and seeing Thrawn frustrated, and getting a lot more into, you know, behind the scenes of the Empire and Thrawn trying to maybe go around the chain of command to get things done because he is so frustrated with how things are working out against the Ghost. But, overall, I would say, A- for both, being on equal level playing fields with just so many different things happening. So two really kind of different episodes in the end, but uniquely very solid.
Very good. Jay?
Boy, you guys are harsh, especially you, Aaron. I'm surprised. I thought I was a tough grader over here, the old teacher. For me, you know, I definitely graded last week's episodes a lot lower than this week. I loved both of these. I really did. So, I mean, if I'm looking at a grading scale where 92 to 100 is an A, I'm going to have to give Kindred a 95, and I would have to go with Crawler Commandeers at a 92. So they both get an A for me, but different ranges of A's. So basically everything that you guys have already said. And also just seeing, it was so nice to you, I have to say this, seeing Ezra using the Force and throwing Rook against the wall or against the mountain or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Because I've been saying for the last several weeks, why isn't Ezra using the Force? You know, when they drug that hyperdrive across the sand, why wasn't he helping by using the Force?
Great point.
So, yeah. Point. So I was like, finally, you know, we're getting to see him doing his stuff again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's the little things like that. And Nick, I'm so glad you brought that up with the hello there, because I forgot about that too. And that just tickled me pink when I saw that. So that's good stuff. Definitely good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, beautiful.
Excellent.
Great points.
Very good points. And I will have to admit, I will have to go back and watch. I missed the hello there. I don't know how I missed that, but I'll have to go back and rewatch that just so I can catch that. Because definitely that's a good throw out. Kenobi is next to Chopper. Kenobi is my favorite. So yeah, I'll need to go back and listen to that. So good job. Good conversation. Great discussion. If people want to continue discussing Star Wars with you, Nick, how would they go about doing that?
You can come work for me if you like. All I do is talk about Star Wars at work, apparently. Not hiring quite yet, but you can find me on Twitter at Nick Dico, D-I-C-O.
All right. Excellent. Jay, how about you?
Well, yeah, the easiest way to reach me is in the Twitterverse as well, and I am at Joyce Krebs for that. And I'm also a co-host on the podcast Starship Sabers and Scoundrels. So you can catch me at S Cubed Pod as well. And of course on Coffee with Kenobi, where my blogs drop on the 18th of every other month. And, I also have my Core Worlds Couture fashion review blogs. I've got some new stuff coming out here soon, so you can watch for all that from me. But yeah, Twitter, definitely number one way to communicate your Rebels thoughts and bread droppings with me. So. I'm just gonna play along with it, because
roll,
you know,
into it.
Just
gladly roll with.
But I'm bumped.
I expect to hear this on the next, you know, Starship Sabers and Scoundrels.
Oh yeah,
bread droppings.
Hashtag bread droppings. There you have it, folks.
So if you want to
drop it every chance again, every chance we get, we're going to drop it every chance, literally.
Absolutely. So if you want to let us know what you think, we'd love to hear what you thought about these episodes or about any episodes of Rebels that we've reviewed or upcoming or in the past. You can always look us up on the Twitter at Rebels Reactions, or of course, email us your thoughts, rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. If you want to talk Star Wars with me, I'm always up for that. My Twitter's at TAHarris121079, or of course, you can email me at aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. I don't know why that always trips me up. I think it's the at, then the name, then the at. It's a double at's what it is. It's an at.
So, all three of us were, yes.
We all got the butt at the same time. We got it tonight, folks. Jay, Nick, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. It was a blast having you both on. I appreciate it. Everybody out there listening, thank you so much for listening to Rebels Reactions. Thank you so much. Make sure you check out the Coffee with Kenobi website and check out all of our bloggers and all of our other shows like Coffee with Kenobi, our flagship show, Comics with Kenobi, Lattes with Leia, and of course, we've talked a lot about the Legends tonight, so check out Legends Library as well. Again, Jay, Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure, Aaron and Jay, as always.
It definitely was great having you both on. Thank you again, everybody. Remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.